2 years after the death of her father, Siri Husvedt was speaking at a memorial service when she was suddenly overtaken by an inexplicable force. But although her arms and legs were shaking violently, she had complete control over her mind and kept speaking. After another public episode, she knew something important in her life had changed. The experience led her to question her sense of self and the connections between the mental and physical worlds, the mind and body. Ms. Husvedt, the author of 4 novels, has written a memoir of the experience called The Shaking Woman or A History of My Nerves. It's published by Henry Holt, and I'm very pleased it has brought her back to our show today. Hi, Siri.
I'm happy to be here.
Was that seizure you experienced when you were speaking at the tree planting memorial for your father the first time you ever had anything like that happen to you?
It wasn't the first time, but it was the first seizure that looked like that or felt like that. Years before, in 1982, I had a seizure before a prolonged migraine. I was in an art gallery in Paris and was suddenly thrown against the wall. One of my arms went up in the air and I crashed against the wall behind me. It lasted only seconds, and it was followed by this very long and intractable migraine. But nothing like the shaking had ever happened before.
Did people in the audience know what was happening to you?
I don't think so. My mother said that it looked like I was being electrocuted, and my poor sister Liv wanted to walk over and hold me up. I really thought I might fall over, but I didn't.
Well, people sometimes when they're doing something very emotional, their legs shake and their voices quiver.
Yes, and I myself have had a nervous tremor before events many times. That ordinary little shaking of your hand. This was so not like that. It was so much larger, huge flapping of my limbs.
So it must have been alarming. Did you go to a doctor immediately after?
I did not go to a doctor immediately. I'm not exactly sure why. It might be just in my family we didn't rush to doctors, and I thought it might be just an isolated experience. I don't know why.
You were being emotional. It was a stressful time.
Yes, and I thought, well, if it happens again, I will look for help, but I wasn't sure that it would.
And it did.
But it did. It did. And then, of course, even though I had absolutely no anxiety before the first two, by the time I had the third episode, I was feeling extremely anxious about speaking in public or doing public events.
So you linked it to speaking in public. You weren't having them at other times?
I ended up having another seizure when I was climbing a mountain in the Pyrenees, and I realized that certainly at least that seizure had no emotional content because I was having a gay old time. I think I hyperventilated, and it brought on a seizure.
So how did you explain these seizures to yourself?
Well, my first hypothesis, when I was actually, I was sitting in a neuroscience lecture. I've been steeped in neuroscience for the last 4 years, very seriously. And there was a woman.
Were you doing that because of the seizures?
Or? No, long before the
seizures.
Because
you were writing about neuroscience in your fiction, weren't
yes,
you?
Yes, and psychiatry. And so this is an old interest that goes way back to my days as a college student and graduate student. But anyway, there was a woman sitting behind me at one of these lectures, and I asked her what she did afterwards. She was a psychiatrist who treated people with conversion disorder, which is the modern term for hysteria. And hysteria is simply when people have neurological symptoms, for example, a paralysis or a seizure that can't be explained in usual neurological terms. In other words, they don't have epilepsy, they don't have. So I thought, my God, maybe I had an hysterical seizure because I was talking about my father. It made sense to me.
Now, originally, hysteria was thought to only be something that women suffered. The hysteria refers to the womb, doesn't it?
It does. It goes way back to the Greeks and the idea of wandering wombs and the fact, in fact, hysteria was thought to be an illness of unmarried or widowed women who didn't have enough sex.
We're not going to go there. But did you decide that you were going to work on this by yourself, or are you going to go to doctors?
Well, I did eventually, of course, go to a doctor. I saw a psychiatrist two psychiatrists, both of whom did not think I had panic disorder because I have no anxiety in advance. Nobody bought my hysteria diagnosis.
And epilepsy was ruled out?
Well, and epilepsy was ruled out. I did have an MRI, and my brain is normal. Of course, a lot of people who have epilepsy also have normal MRI brain scans. So it is a very mysterious issue.
But you said that you'd had an earlier seizure that preceded a migraine, a very long-lasting migraine.
Yes.
I would think that somebody would have linked the two.
Well, there is something on the books called migralepsy, which is a very strange thing, but there are symptoms of both people having migraine, and then it turns into a seizure. Now, that's not what I had. Nevertheless, if you have either migraine or epilepsy, there's about a 60% chance that you will get the one that you don't have also. So clearly in the brain and the way the nervous system works, there's an overlap. There can be an overlap in these multiple neurological disorders. So I'm highly sensitive in a neurological way, clearly.
So you saw this as neurological. You've written a lot about psychiatry. You've worked with psychiatric patients. Did you ever consider that this might have some kind of a psychological reason?
Well, if I had been diagnosed with hysteria or conversion disorder, then I would have been in the care of a psychiatrist. What interested me in the book, too, is to talk about how difficult it can be to untangle these two. Psychiatry and neurology are not often that distinct. And in psychiatric illnesses, as well as in neurological illnesses, there are brain events that are taking place. So untangling the illness from the person or creating a kind of distinct diagnosis can be very, very difficult in both psychiatry and in neurology.
Well, we're talking mind-body.
Yes.
And the links are, we can't separate one from the other as much as we try it.
No, I think people habitually do, and there's a reason to talk about psychological problems versus something like a brain tumor. Clearly, these are different. And at the same time, the common wisdom among scientists is that these two are absolutely related. Freud believed they were related, the mind and the body, or the brain and the mind. But there is a gap, an explanatory gap between the connection between neural substrates in the brain and the content of our subjective reality.
I know that if something like this happened to me out of the blue, I probably would go and Google seizures.
Yes, well, certainly. As I said, because I had been steeped in this material for so long before this ever happened to me, I did have some ready knowledge. But I also did a lot of reading in epilepsy and various seizure disorders.
My guest is Siri Husvedt, whose latest book is a memoir called The Shaking Woman or A History of My Nerves. It's published by Henry Holt. You talk about there being two women within you, the woman who's with me in the studio right now, and the shaking woman who's some type of alien invader. An alien invader?
Well, what it felt like, you see, I was able to finish the speech when I gave readings and I was having the seizure. I continued to be cognitively clear. I could finish what I was doing.
But at the same time, you must have been distracted.
It's very
distracting.
Your body is fighting
with you. It's
very distracting. So it takes a lot of, I think, just control over your mind and your speech to keep from being so distracted that you have to stop. But that didn't happen to me. I could keep going, even though my body was out of control. So what it felt like was that there was this internal narrator that could continue on despite the fact that there was this alien invader inside me that had taken over my body so that I had no cognitive control over it at all.
Did you locate other medical cases that showed this kind of dual nature?
Oh, yes. There are wonderful doubling stories, both in neurology and, of course, in literature, Dostoevsky's The Double is one of the great ones.
And even before then, we have Memoirs and Confessions of a Justified Sinner.
Absolutely.
By James Hogg.
James Hogg, a wonderful book. I recommend it. But there are many stories. For example, there's one case that I mentioned in the book of a woman who did have a brain injury and was unable to identify herself in the mirror. She could identify everybody else in the mirror, and she talked to this person as the second SM, as her double. The SM is the initials that the neurologists give in the case. And there are also, with migraine, actually, this has never happened to me, but there are a number of doubling stories in migraine. It's called otoscopy in the literature, and it's when suddenly you're walking beside yourself. You have a visual hallucination of your double.
This is different than kids inventing a friend.
It's different from kids inventing a friend, but I think there is something in, you know, because you really see it. It's a visual hallucination. But I do think that imaginary friends, the idea of doubles, others, is something that's very deeply part of what it means to be human. And, you know, we do have two hemispheres of our brain, and in split brain studies, it's been shown how independent these two sides of the brain can be.
Well, religions are often based on the whole duality of dark and light, good and evil, et cetera, and the constant war within us.
Absolutely. And, there's another wonderful syndrome in neurology called alien hand syndrome that some split brain patients have had. And that is when, say, your left hand, it's off in the left hand, does exactly the opposite of what of the will of the person. So the right hand is buttoning up a shirt and the left hand will unbutton it. It's an internal war, a double inside one person.
You had a 15-year-old girl you referred to as B who you taught writing to. And what did you learn from her?
Well, this was an interesting thing. She was very young, and this is the girl who cut herself. That's my B, right? And she wrote about cutting, and because we were talking about fear, and then are we talking about the dream? I'm losing myself because I know you're going somewhere, but I could go a number of places.
No, I was just thinking that while you were doing all of thinking about yourself, other things were coming into your environment that
yes.
You suddenly thought, oh, gee, this applies. So this applies.
That's right.
Joe Brainard's I Remember
yes.
Winds up having a special significance.
Yes, actually, I did use Joe Brainard's I Remember. It's a book that begins, every sentence in the book begins I Remember, and it's Joe Brainard's personal memories. It's a wonderful book. I used this as an exercise for psychiatric patients in the hospital, and I found that doing this exercise, just having them write, I remember, became a kind of memory machine.
Well, isn't this what psychoanalysis is all about?
Well, psychoanalysis, of course, is the talking cure, not the writing cure.
But it's the same idea. It's I remember.
It's I remember. It's a similar idea. It's creating memories, and in psychoanalysis, creating a narrative that makes sense, that makes some emotional sense for the patient.
What do you think would have happened if you'd had this experience and you were a doctor, not a writer?
I probably would have treated it in a different way, but you know, the double aspect of this book and what gave me such pleasure when I was writing it is that I did get to occupy two positions at once. In other words, I got to be both detective and victim, both a kind of a doctor because I have read so much in the material, and the patient. And that duality as well is a kind of dialectical pull inside the book.
Have you come to the conclusion that you're wired differently than other people?
Well, I'm certainly wired in ways that have changed my life and made life more difficult at times, but I also think that the hypersensitivity that's come with migraine and possibly with the seizure disorder isn't all bad either.
There are anti-seizure drugs.
There certainly are. And I, you know, before I do anything, even you, Leonard, I take beta blockers to push down the stress hormones that I think are probably part of the trigger for this.
I cause you stress, Sari?
You don't cause me stress. Just I guess it's just the very idea of public performance.
You also have employed biofeedback?
Yes.
How does that work in this case?
I use biofeedback for migraines. Biofeedback is simply a kind of scientific form of deep meditation, so that when I learned it many years ago, I have now become able to warm up my extremities and go into a very deep state that lessens the pain of migraines.
And have you been able to eliminate the seizures?
No. I think it's still there. I'm still in the care of a neurologist, and we'll see what happens.
But I get the feeling there's never been a real diagnosis here.
No, not so far. It was interesting. This book came out in Germany before it came out here, and there was an article in Der Spiegel, the news magazine, and I got a number of letters from doctors all over Germany with various diagnoses. None of them were the same. So it's hard to know. Of course, these people hadn't looked at me. They were offering opinions.
Without a diagnosis, are there questions about whether the illness is real?
I don't think that there's any question that the illness is real, and I think the whole idea of real and unreal illnesses is probably faux. In other words, something is going on, and even in hysteria, my first diagnosis, now on brain scans, they can see that if someone has a paralysis, that there is the candidate brain region is affected, and when the paralysis goes away, so does the brain scan changes.
So if there isn't a specific diagnosis, but you found a way to keep this thing under control, does it really matter?
I'm
not sure
it matters.
Whether you have somebody say, well, this is caused by this chemical in your body doing this to your nervous
system?
No,
it's not clear that it matters. And, you know, a lot of illnesses have names, but we don't know what causes them. So, you know, there are different levels. Some things are very easy. The measles we know a lot about, and other illnesses we don't. A central point for me was that illness becomes part of a human story, and especially chronic illness. And you can't, in those cases, just abstract the illness from the person anyway.
Well, part of the problem with you is that you look so healthy.
Well, and I, you know, it's not that I'm a wreck. I'm fine, but I did want to look into this strange happening and see what I could come up with.
And has the sense of duality affected your writing, your other writing, your writing of fiction?
Well, as you pointed out earlier, both psychiatric and neurological themes have been part of my novels, and that's because they've been part of my life. But I think that at the end of this book, I come to the conclusion that I am the shaking woman, and that's a way of owning this illness. I mean, saying that it's part of me, it's not an alien, finally.
I could have told you that, Sari.
Thank you.
Sari Husvet will be in conversation with Rita Charon tonight at 7 o'clock at the Powerhouse Arena in Brooklyn. To RSVP, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. The book from Henry Holt is called The Shaking Woman, or A History of My Nerves. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you for having me, Leonard.